Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
It's like reporting someone has died. Eventually, you're going to be right with this report.
CBS Sports with Joe Paterno. They were wrong. They were wrong. Oh, they were right of it.
Except if you're the guy working at the Jerusalem Post back in the day and you report Jesus Christ has passed away.
Pete Thamel.
We should get him a hockey mask and call him Jason because he just keeps coming. He just keeps coming back from improbable death circumstances.
And SI's Pat Forty.
We are rooting for football, but we are just increasingly unlikely to get football.
And here's Dan.
Welcome to the pod. Not sure it's going to be the most uplifting one today. I don't know about you guys. A lot of pessimism out there. A little depressing. We're here to tell you what we hear. And so if you don't want to hear bad news, then I can't really help you. This is not about rooting for the season to end. Far from it. Anybody who says this is easy and they should just play has zero sources, no idea what they're talking about, and has not spoken to anyone who has to actually try to do this. Like, you can't you talk to anyone in college athletics, and it's like just five alarm fire right now, right? That's all I'm hearing is, how in the world do we do this? I still remain optimistic that they're going to try, that something's going to happen, that this is manageable in some way if you just sort of plow through it, but that optimism feels very naive, and I hate being naive. So what do you guys think? Pac-12 shut down the non-conference on Friday following the Big Ten's lead. Patriot League joined the Ivy League in shutting down, obviously, for the fall. No fall sports. Maybe it goes to the spring. We are increasingly seeing high school organizations around the country at least discussing moving football to the spring, really almost all team sports, and maybe just trying to do a fall if there's going to be high school athletics of like golf, tennis, you know, cross country or track and field, things like that, that are individual sports that are played outdoors. Junior college football is shut down until the spring. Obviously, none of those have the financial implications of the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC, which are still holding firm at this moment. But, man, everything's nipping at the edges. So I'm not hearing a whole lot out there. Pete, you're back from vacation.
What did I miss? Anything?
Gave you some time for some clarity. Yeah. What are you hearing?
I have gone from pessimism to fatalism, Dan. I wrote a story, it's going to be up on Yahoo on Monday, that basically says it's all over but the press releases. You would be hard-pressed to find anyone of any clout in college athletics who would tell you with a straight face that they think there's going to be some sort of recognizable season this fall. It is complete and utter desperation. Even the people who, like, 2 weeks ago were trying to, like, get comfortable with being uncomfortable and those types of things. Even they're saying it's not happening. I had one AD tell me, which I thought was a really good line, like, there's no path right now. Like, if you look and say, okay, we're having a season to fall. All right, what's the path? Like, what's the plan here? How are we going to do this? And there's no good answer to that. I had a high-ranking official say, ultimately, no one is playing football in the fall. It's just a matter of how it unfolds. I had a coach basically say, it's a foregone conclusion. So that's where we are right now. Barring a medical miracle, there will not be college football in any recognizable form in the fall. TV is holding out hope. You know, I had one TV executive basically say to me, like, maybe we play four in the fall and six in the spring. Like, they're trying, you know, it's an inventory game to them, and they're trying to salvage their inventory. But no one is denying the, you know, the desperation that's permeating through the landscape right now. And it is as bleak as I've heard it. Yeah, I hate to be doomsday, but that's just where the sport is right now. In fact, the most interesting thing I got this weekend was that a lot of people in the NFL are really, really getting pessimistic towards fatalistic about the NFL's ability to handle any kind of a season, which is another story. And I'm sure our friends Charles and Therese are handling that. But that took me aback a little bit. You know, you see the MLS struggling. MLB has been a dumpster fire. The NBA is still tenuous whether the bubble works. And college football, you know, we've said it since March, is going to be the hardest one to do it. And it's proving that right now.
I had a pretty well... I was talking earlier today to an NFL, just put an NFL person. And he's like, 10-game season, maybe. Maybe they get it. They're going to start. He still thinks they're just going to bulldoze in and go. But how does it make it? And everyone's staring at October, November. Everyone who has a medical group that they are relying on, which all these people are, okay? They're not relying on, you know, Eddie at the gas station or, you know, I think Chuck Woolery was making like an old game show host. Everyone is entitled to their opinion. And so I am fine with that. And I like looking at problems in different ways and at different times. I've had different ideas on this. But if you have a medical group, every one of them seems to be telling them like October 15th, like, look out. And that's what's scary. They're all like, so what happens then? Even if we start, how do we finish? I've always said I think they will start. I still think they will start a college football season. Maybe I am stupid. But I still think that there is a will you just plow through. But I don't know. I don't know. And that's the NFL. The NFL has so much money at stake in playing these games that, I mean, you look at the money spent by the NBA to try to get this thing done. Like, they are trying everything, and it's down to, like, you know, how do we slip in the side girlfriends and the weed right. dealer and stuff like that. I mean, you know, like, they're scared of their I think the NHL may have the best move because they just went to Canada where there's, like, 200 cases a day.
Yeah.
They should have gone further. They should have played them all. There's, like, nothing in Edmonton. There's been, like, three deaths in it. They have one in Toronto, one in Edmonton. I'm like, you should have put them, gone farther. Go to one of those, like, Yellow Knife or something like that. Just some...
Yeah, they got hockey rinks way up there.
Moose
Arctic Circle.
Moose Jaw. Just some, yeah, there's literally Nova Scotia has never had a case.
Wow.
Yeah, the problem is
we play LSU Texas there, nobody... in Nova Scotia. That's what we need to start figuring out.
Yes, we can.
Nova Scotia, how do you feel about we're all week zero?
We need an importer exporter in Nova Scotia to make this happen.
We're all going to be Canadian. Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the border's closed, but maybe they can, yeah. So anyway, I don't know. Pat, what are you hearing? Yeah. I just wanted to add that NFL thing is, yeah, they're like, all right, but then what? You know, and I think that's maybe your thing. Yeah. Can they get four games in, six games? I mean, the idea of like Pat and I talk Friday. The idea of a playoff, like nobody's even discussing how's this work on the playoff.
No. Yeah.
Right? This is the snowstorm. If we skid into the driveway at the end of the snowstorm drive, you don't sit there and go, yeah, but, oh, can you run out to the store? Like, now.
Right. Let's get into the driveway alive and see how much we got in with us. I mean, no.
And the snow is picking up.
No, I'm hearing basically the same things. I talked to, you know, one administrator last week who just said it's inevitable. You know, another one like, why are we waiting till August 1st? I can understand why at least the three of the Power Five are waiting until August 1st. And I know why they're mad at the other two, because the Big Ten basically just said, this is college football, is there's five mob bosses out there. Basically, they're like, I'm going to do what's best for my crime family, and I don't care about your crime family. And so the Big Ten does its deal, and the Pac-12 probably had always been somewhat in lockstep with them. And said, we're going conference only. And the other three are like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I think the other three will probably try to let this play out further. There is an SEC meeting of athletic directors Monday, but probably not major news going to come out with that. I don't think they're going to do anything definitive. Those three conferences want to take this as far as they can. I think they're all, none of them are dumb. I think they all say, all right, by August 1st, we're probably cutting bait here. And we are pulling the plug. You know, maybe they try to go further and actually have games scheduled and play games. But I think they're at least willing to wait that far while increasingly, to use Pete's word, fatalistic about it. You know, and this, again, this is not
necessarily a political thing. I talked to a conservative AD who is very much of the opinion, we're not playing till the spring. It's not because he hates sports or we hate sports or anybody like that is rooting for the virus. No, nobody's rooting for the damn virus. We are rooting for football, but we are just increasingly unlikely to get football. You know, the complications are so endless with this that, you know, unless things really, really turn around somewhere in the next couple of weeks, I just think it's inevitable that this is where we end up. And we end up with a spring 2021 season, maybe, and it's a mess. People are playing 6 to 9 games. Most of the top players are not playing at all. Scheduling's a disaster. Trying to run that many sports on a campus is a disaster. TV scheduling is a disaster. Everything's a disaster, but that's going to be probably as good as it gets.
Sully just informed me via text here that Canada shut down their college football season.
Yeah. Already. I got scooped on that.
And Dean Leonard of the University of Calgary Dinos has transferred to Ole Miss.
Kiffin working the Canada transfer wire.
Canadian transfer. They got video of this guy. Looks all right.
The portal,
72-yard pick
the
six
portal
here.
Goes across international borders, huh?
Hey?
Yeah, good job. Sorry, you're not playing here either. No, I don't know. I hope for Dean's sake he didn't go, but whatever. Yeah, University of Calgary.
I'm going to guess that there's some certain aspects of Oxford that are more appealing to old Dean than the University of Calgary. Let's just put it that way.
It's a devilish better place to spend the winter.
Game day in the Grove has certain advantages in October, say, than the atmosphere at the University of Calgary. A little
and
less
every
North
other
face.
Day on campus. Say,
yeah, a little less North face.
Would
little
you like to transfer?
Sundress.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I'll transfer. Yes.
No, I don't need a scholarship.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like these ADs that are doing this, like they're not. It's not political. They're literally going to their businesses are going to be destroyed. I mean, I talked to one in the SEC last week, and it's like he called it Armageddon. It's like he's going to have to. I mean, there's going to be staff layoffs. There's going to be coaches fired. I mean, there's going to be budget. Student athletes are going to lose their sports. This is not. You don't become the AD to like hatchet.
No.
People, kneecap people. These are their friends. These even the big athletic departments have 300-400 workers.
Right.
I mean, that's the bit, right? Those are the really big ones. Like, these are families. You have these people who are there. They went to the school. They played at the school. They've been working there for 23 years. And it's like, you're going to have to lay these people off. Like, this whole thing is a disaster.
Awful.
They want to play so bad, but they don't see the path. And so, you know, it's unfair to complain to them. You know, my argument is, well, like, so like, what is it that makes it impossible? Is it like, what's the number of kids on a team that can get a test? And I think that's kind of the hard part. No one has a guidance on it. There's not a plan. There's not a, you know, there's just not a, there's just such concern of how the heck we pull it off. And then you have university presidents and everyone else involved. There's just no good path for people to look at and say, I think that's kind of Pete's thing. Like, how do we make this work? But what as you talk to guys, what is the or women that run these athletic departments, what is it that is the tipping point that's made it so pessimistic? The rising tests, the increased death rate, the different stuff, or is it just the fact that, I mean, this hasn't died down clearly. There doesn't seem to be any kind of plan to have the virus die down. It's all just live with it. And then these guys can't live with it. What are you hearing that's the factor that's getting?
Well, I think first, Dan, is just, you know, this weekend we saw the first day of more than 70,000 tests in 70,000 positive cases in a single day. So in the heartbeat of college football, Texas, you know, the Deep South, North Carolina, South Carolina, Arizona, California, the virus is as bad as it's been anywhere in the country. Houston is basically the new New York. right? Like they're already talking in Houston that they may have to have a 2-week shutdown, and the governor doesn't want that. So you're talking about like right in the belt buckle of college football, right? You know, from coast to coast where it matters most, the virus is as bad as it's been. So I think that's one factor now. And then the other factor is now that these kids are back, the reality of students coming back and how many of them, because a lot of these, you know, 70,000, these numbers we've seen recently have been young people, have been people who, you know, think they're going to be immune and they make up that facet of it. I just really think as we've pushed forward and as we've seen everything and as they've seen the complications, like I had one coach say to me, like, right now, it's not even legal in my state for me to practice because the gathering is like too big and I'm supposed to practice on July 20, whatever, you know, when these guys get back. So I just think it's an accumulation of different factors from where the virus is to like the testing difficulties that places have had. Now, look, there's been some schools that have done great, you know, like, they're dead last in the Fauci Cup, right? There's some schools that just have done this, but like the ability to sustain that when students return to campus. One coach said to me this morning, you know, he said, look, it sounds great in the conference office when you say delay, delay, delay. Well, that's not easy for me sitting here trying to tell 18 to 22 year olds to not do normal things that they do and try to keep them away from their vices. The best way for me to keep my guys to behave is to get camp and start games and give them an incentive. Say, hey, do what you're doing, which is essentially nothing, sitting in your dorm and playing video games for the next 4 weeks while we wait. That's not a good strategy, you know, in real time, especially when students return to campus.
Yeah, I know a lot of what I'm hearing is similar to what Pete's hearing as far as the stumbling blocks. I would add to that, first of all, as he did touch on, the campus environment will become so much more crowded, so much more social in a month. And we've seen enough problems without a crowded campus and without a lot of socializing. The increasing number of people 20 to 29 who are testing positive, although the stories are still occasional. Just any stories that come out of somebody who's 21 who died from the virus, somebody who's 30 who died from the virus, somebody who's on a ventilator at age 27 are a real chilling effect. At the back of the mind with this whole thing as well is the knowledge that we are asking largely unpaid, ununionized students to come back and fill our coffers. And there's a lot of presidents that are really like uncomfortable with that. There's some ADs that are uncomfortable with that too. And yeah, you can make an argument that, hey, college athletes have got a pretty good deal. But at the heart of the matter is you are willing to push this thing to a level that makes health experts uncomfortable because you need the money. That's a tough sell at the end of the day. You know, as you said, the NFL and even the NFL is having, you know, some second thoughts on things. But that is a purely transactional deal between professionals, professional workforce, professional management. This is not the same thing. And I think it's tough for some people to get there. I had one AD, you know, who very much wants them to play. But he said, I hope we're not selling our souls to the devil.
I saw this story today in the Detroit news. Like there were 40 confirmed COVID cases to one house party in the Detroit area. Out, just kind of out in the rural area, actually, kind of near Ann Arbor. One party, house party on July 2nd and into the 3rd. It was a good house party. Made it past midnight. Was not invited. What the hell, man? 50 people were in attendance, 40 confirmed cases. That's college.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right? Right. That's college, yeah. Right? 50 people in a little house. And
same keg.
Everyone crowded around the keg. Yeah. Right. That's, you know, so how do you prevent that uptick? We joke about the Fauci Cup. You know, I do think that was it's a horrible strategy. I get all that. But some of these I think Kentucky has no cases. Notre Dame has like one case, maybe none. I don't know. Some of these guys are doing
Penn
really
State,
good jobs.
Very
but
few
how, do they,
maybe
how
zero,
does that last?
Yeah.
And then when everything gets pushed inside, like I think. The North is doing better now because we can go outside and eat on patios or can have people over to your backyard. Even young people can do a little bit more. I mean, they talk about the beaches crowded. I always think that's kind of actually not so bad, although, you know, it gets built up. But once everyone's inside, I don't know. I guess there has to be a will to barrel through to go into a danger level and barrel through it. And the NFL, that will can be there because you have guys making $30 million. Everyone knows what you signed up for, right? Like, I have always been, I was from the start a big proponent of golf being played. The UFC, when the UFC was getting crushed, I wrote columns saying, let's go. I mean, these are cage fighters, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
There's an accepted risk.
This is what, you know.
Yeah.
There's an accepted risk to the profession. We're not just sending Susie sophomore out to run, you know, play volleyball or something like that. This is Jorge Masvidal wants to get into a cage. He may get his head kicked off. He also may catch COVID. Yeah. Deal with it.
But pretty simple testing for two cage fighters too, right?
Is also right. And if one guy gets it, they pull him out. That's actually how the big fight Saturday night happened, right? They just fly another guy in, and you can get an island in the Middle East and put all the people you need. I mean, they have unbelievable, even there, they have unbelievable amounts of, they had 8,000 tests before Saturday night's UFC 251. Wow. They have a safe zone in the middle of the Persian Gulf of a bubble. Like they had four planes fly everyone they needed in from around the world. You had to quarantine in your room for over 2 days. There is testing all the time. It's incredible what the UFC has done just to stage these fights that involve 10 fights is the goal. So you got 20 people fighting, a few refs. And it's incredible amount of effort to do that. And that everybody there is basically like be one football game. I mean, you know, counting the cameraman, it might be one football game, one college football game. And now we're going to try to do this at 130 places. So what would you think is, I mean, it's funny because early on, I thought back in late April, May, there was a lot of like, I don't think this is going to happen. Then there was this part of June where it felt more optimistic, right? People were like, you know, we might be able to do this. And then you had these ridiculous public pronouncements like, we're going to play with 75% of the fans in the stands. But that just all seemed to collapse by late June. I don't know. Has there been a change or am I imagining?
No, I think the whole thing has been ebbs and flows to a remarkable degree. You know, I mean, the level of public pessimism and or confidence. And part of that is somewhat wishful thinking, too, you know, of like, hey, we're turning the corner. Let's just assume we're going to be back to everything is normal, you know, in the fall. But shoot, I mean, if you go back, like Kirk Herbstreit, of all people, was really pessimistic about this in the spring. But you got to the point, you know, where everything started. The curve was certainly descending. Deaths were reducing. And I think, you know, this was more a society as a whole than anything else. It's like we get to Memorial Weekend. Everybody's like, I'm tired of this. I'm going to go out and do my deal. That did not coincide well with eventually wanting to play football in the fall. But I think starting Memorial Weekend, maybe earlier in some places, and you start seeing ratcheting up into summer and people are less and less likely to quarantine and do everything that we were told to do. And I think there was overconfidence and a lack of foresight, and it has turned into what we're looking at now. And some states that just completely opened up willy-nilly and let things fly, and now we're paying the piper.
I will point out that in late April, I wrote we should take a long look at the spring column. College football needs to look to the spring. And I will point out that one member of our podcast team did gently mock me for that once we got to May and June. No,
was that
Pat.
Me?
What did I say?
You were just like some. Yeah.
Too early.
It's like some people wanted to move into the spring. What a crazy idea. So eventually that all came back around. But I do think the Herbstreit.
It was too early at the time. You're going to end up being right probably, but you were too early then.
That's okay. I wrote the it's column like again and nobody remembered I wrote it the first time. So
it's like reporting someone has died. Eventually you're going to be right with this report.
CBS Sports with Joe Paterno. They were wrong. Oh, they were right of it. Yeah.
Except if you're the guy working at the Jerusalem Post back in the day and you report Jesus Christ has passed away. And then 3 days later, you have to write the whopper of all corrections.
Retraction to end all retractions.
Your editor calls you. I swear he was dead, dude. He was dead.
I saw him roll
the stone walking around.
Out of the cave.
He's turning.
It was over. It was over.
He's turning water into wine. How could you get this wrong? Jerusalem Post regrets the error. So other than that, that mistake has not been repeated in over 2,000 years.
That's true.
You're always good. Eventually, they're going to die. Anyway, go ahead.
I completely forgot what I was going to say now. But we've been on a collision course for this in some way, shape, or form for, you know, for 4 months. And I do think it should not be underestimated that a lot of the optimism, be it from universities and be it from athletic departments, was artificially pumped in. It was, well, we need season ticket renewals. Well, we need, so they just, hope is free, right? And they wanted to keep perpetuating hope, because if everybody was as fatalistic and pessimistic as me, it, you know, the environment that they operate in and they have to do business in would be a lot worse. So they needed students back on campus. The fallacy of football being on campus when they're there has been a nice lure to try to get students back enrolled and students on campus. I had a coach say something interesting to me this morning. He was like, look, like, you know, if we're sitting around having a beer, do I think we have football in the fall? No, absolutely not. But he's like, my job is every day I got to get my team ready, tested, healthy, pep talk, stay out, don't go out, all that stuff. And he's like, every week that we have more good test results and we announce them, it makes our university feel more secure about its plan to go back. Because at the end of the day, college athletics is a multi-billion-dollar business. Higher ed is a multi-trillion-dollar business. And so for as much as presidents and chancellors are worried about football and athletics and all that stuff, that's like 5% of their worry. Their biggest worry is how they're going to deal with the financial from limited students on campus, limited dorms, limited capacity, you know, obviously declining. I mean, the places that are overloaded right now are community college, because everybody's sitting back and just trying to take classes online. Your traditional higher education places are, you know, those presidents are really feeling it. So I think part of the voodoo of pitching a fall of normalcy was having the potential of football be available.
Yeah. And as big as college football is, and I still think this is why there's a chance that they play this, because it is big. But you can see why Harvard and these Patriot Leagues, and they bail quickly, because their president is sitting there going, I can't worry about this. I'm trying to figure out how we continue to charge somebody $65,000 to live in a dorm that we have to try to make safe and take online classes and try to. I mean, this is the higher ed bubble. Is like, okay, you pay that money to take, especially freshmen, you know, history 100 and the econ 101. How good is it, right? Now you say, well, what you get is you get off to college. It's the experience. It's moving out of the house. It's the whole campus experience. But like, why would you spend this money? And that's parents everywhere are trying to deal with that and saying gap year, or we're just going to stay home, or hey, they got Econ 101 at the local community college, and it's, you know, $450. That's what we're going to do. So it's just such a trying time. So you can see why those. However, you know, college athletics, you know, what are we going to come back to? You know, all of that. I mean, these things are hard. I wanted to get to this one thing that the NBA is doing in this. I don't know if you've seen this, but part of their restart in Disney World is they've set up an anonymous hotline for anyone inside the bubble to report if they've seen anyone else violating the rules, so you can snitch. It's called the players have started calling it the snitch line. You can call the snitch line and say, you know, presume I saw LeBron and Anthony Davis, you know, sitting right next to each other discussing something, right? They need to be 6 feet apart. Or, you know, I saw, you know, who knows what else could be happening in the bubble? Yeah. Leave it to your imagination.
Who else can get in the bubble? Yeah.
So our Chris Haynes, a great NBA reporter who is inside the NBA bubble. He's bubble bound for a few months. Mad respect for Chris Haynes and all of the NBA reporters who are going in there for three months. He has sources that have said the snitch hotline has not been utilized yet. Nobody. So I have a lot. I am the one. Remember we did the tuna fish thing the other day? Like, I don't like the tuna. What's one of the tuna companies snitched on the others?
Yeah.
And I can't remember, but I'm not buying that tuna.
One of the tuna
anymore.
Companies called out Bumblebee and whoever else was on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, I think Chicken of the Stars.
Chicken of the Sea.
Chicken of the Sea. Anyway, I'm on the non-snitch. No snitching. So I much respect for the NBA. However, if this was college football, had the snitch hotline, okay, who is the most likely coach to snitch about another school, you know, report that, hey, Ohio State had a, they were at the frat, or, you know, Michigan went to that party on July
2nd. I mean, he's not a coach anymore, but on the 16-year anniversary of Fulmer not going to SEC Media Days after he snitched on Alabama, that has to be him,
Fulmer,
right?
He's just snitching. Yeah, he might be snitching.
I'll tell you who it is.
Or Hugh Freeze and his, you know, please email us if you've seen any violations.
Yeah.
That's perhaps the all-time that? Press email? Release. That was, by God.
Please contact our. So who is the snitcher? Who could we not trust? Because so far, NBA players, that's a band of brothers right there. They are sticking together. No snitching. Now, maybe no violations, too. We don't know.
Dave Clawson.
I do think LeBron James will literally beat the hell out of whoever breaks this bubble. Because he's like, this is my last shot of the title, practically. We're doing this.
It's Dave Clawson from Wake Forest. Remember when he blew out Louisville because their radio guy gave Louisville their game plan and he went public with it?
Oh, right. Didn't they leave behind the game plan?
No.
Yeah, WikiLeaks.
The radio guy called ahead.
The radio guy, like, sat in, you know, with the coaches on what they were going to do and then got a hold of his buddy who worked for Louisville and said, yeah, here's Wake's game plan. And he did the same. He, like, called Army, too, and told them what Wake was going to do. So
why was that guy doing that? Did he hate Wake?
I'm not sure we ever got a good explanation on that. I remember trying to reach the guy to see if he would, like, you know, unburden himself on what happened, and I never heard back from him.
Yeah, he was the color guy. He played there. He was, like, a fairly popular local guy. I remember trying to reach him too, Pat, as we were working for competitors at the time. Yeah, he's never talked. He's just, but he does, the last I heard of this, he does live, like, in Winston-Salem, right in the heart of the Wake Forest
still
community.
Does,
so, like,
huh?
He's, you know, like, so his kids are playing Little League with the coach's kids and all that stuff. And it's needless to say, it is quite awkward.
Yeah.
My most likely to snitch would be Frank Solich. He just doesn't care. He's just like old 70-year-old codger. He just is like, yeah, whatever, man. I got run out of my shot at the big time. The program's falling apart since. I think Frank Solich would roll on anyone.
Frank Solich. Literally out of nowhere.
Like, I'd forgotten Frank Solich was still coaching. So much less think of him as the dime dropper.
He's
wow.
He doesn't care any. He is just down there coaching his players. I visited with him a couple years ago and I was down in Athens. He's just living a nice life. He's not tapped in.
What SEC coach would be most likely to call the snitch line?
I think it's Lane Kiffin. It's always the projection. Yeah. It's the projector, right?
Well, that's Kiffin. Did like, turn in Florida for what he thought was violations that weren't, if I remember correctly. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons Mike Slive came to dislike Lane Kiffin so much.
Lane Kiffin accused an anonymous woman he didn't even know who runs the fax machine at the Pahokee High School, right, of basically cheating. And then they went and found, you know, Miss Jones down there in Pahokee, and she's what? He accused, he's been dropping dimes on everyone, whether it's true or not. You know he's calling that thing in with, like, a, you know, a towel over the thing. You know.
You just sounded like AOL dial-up, Dan.
Yeah, it was like, you know, a big party at Alabama. Big party in Tuscaloosa. Absolutely. Nick Saban's beach. He's at Nick Saban's lake house. Not enough socialists. He dime them all out. That's my thought. The snitch line.
It
could be the greatest thing the NBA ever created.
College snitch line would be priceless. Because
I bet college coaches are going to call the NBA one to report, like, Rick Stansbury showing up at the bubble with, like, McDonald's All-Americans in the trunk of his rental car.
The number of college coaches you talk to who want to dime out other college coaches, but they're afraid to do it publicly because then they'll look like they're, you know, weasels, basically, is large.
It's so all of them, actually.
Yeah, well, right.
All of them. All of them. Why don't you look into this thing? Well, what do you got?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, well, yeah, they're tampering with our guys. Well, why don't you say it publicly? Well, I don't want to do that. You know, you get that all the time.
All right, a little bit of news Monday. JT Daniels transfer from USC to Georgia was received as immediate eligibility. He is eligible, and he says he's looking forward to the 2020 season. I think the NCAA was going through the process and just said, just give it to him. Like, just let me know what 2020 season. Go ahead. You can play right now. Get a game going Saturday. You're eligible.
I just wonder,
If there's a season, though, good for Georgia. Hey,
very good for Georgia. You got a quarterback battle now between him and Jamie Newman. Two good players. But I just wonder now if you just email a picture or send a picture of yourself holding up a sign that says COVID with your transfer waiver file. They just go, all right, approved.
Well, this is the easiest one of all time. Of course, JT Daniels is going to get eligible. Do you think Clay Helton is going to endanger the modern day pipeline? They've sent like 8 quarterbacks to USC in the last 2 decades.
Right.
Do you think they would do anything?
Right.
Clay Helton did jumping jacks on his desk and said, I ran off JT Daniels. I treated him like crap. So he could get eligible initially to not endanger that pipeline in the future. I mean, it's the biggest.
Clay Helton doesn't
get
to make the decision, though, Pete. Clay Helton doesn't make the decision.
Clay Helton can make the decision of how to frame it. And it's if you frame it as a runoff, the guy gets eligible 99% of the time. Just like how Tate Martell got eligible. Ohio State was like, yep, we didn't want him here. He wouldn't play. We ran him off. You know, the same thing happened in basketball with the Quade Green, the point guard from Kentucky. Calipari called him a runoff, and he got immediately eligible at Washington last year until he got himself immediately ineligible by academics soon after. But that is a big piece of it. And the coaches who fight it, Harbaugh's fought it. Chris Peterson notoriously fought it with Colson Yankoff, the quarterback who went from Washington to UCLA, which is why the whole transfer thing is just a ruse and they need to just let everyone immediately eligible. Because the strategy to do it, look, if us three dopes can figure it out, it's not going to be that hard. You know, you don't have to pay some lawyer $600 an hour to tell you how to do this.
Well, yeah, but going back to what the NCAA almost did but didn't, they came this close to making transfers immediately eligible in the spring. But then they said, basically, we can't deal with this now. We're going to kick the can till January. They probably should have just done it then. You know, I can understand, given everything else that was on their plate and remains on their plate, why they were a bit daunted by that. But it would save the hustle and the scam of trying to decide who gets a waiver and who doesn't get a waiver.
This is particularly the time everyone needs to be eligible. Look, here's this much. If they're going to play college football this fall, and that is still officially the plan, they need like rosters of like 120 kids.
Oh, for sure. No doubt.
Okay. The NFL has a smaller roster, but there is even discussion of, you know, expanding the roster because we're going to need 65 guys. And then they can consistently churn new guys in off the street. There are people out there that can play. That's their big concern, run out of players. Well, college football, you can't just invent a new kid. So everyone ought to be out. I mean, this is all hands on deck because we have yet to get to the next stage of this. And that's the player saying, I'm out. And it will happen. And it will happen on high-end guys, and it'll happen on low-end guys who are just going to say, I'm doing it. Because we've seen this in the other sports. You can have that love of college football, but what you're getting this fall is not college football like you signed up for. Empty stadiums, who knows how many games. So let's forget it. I'm staying home and working out. I'm going to go to the NFL 2021 or whatever. So they need everybody eligible. They need to be, you know.
105, yeah. You want, like I said, no red shirts or very few. You know, I think nobody's going to go in thinking we're going to redshirt people. You're going to be looking for walk-ons, et cetera.
Full boat, everybody go. We're going to try to make this. Yeah, this is not the time for whatever little playing field. Get all the Canadians can come to Ole Miss. We'll take all of
Canada. Like all 8 of them?
Yeah, every guy. Well, I mean, there's a whole University of Calgary team. This guy wasn't alone on the team, and they were playing somebody else. My
Prove
extensive
it.
Knowledge
Prove
of Canadian
it.
College football. Well, somebody threw the pass that he picked off and took 76 yards. So they're bring them all. We'll take if you play football in the world, come play college football. We need 1,000 guys. We are all right. So let's get them.
If Ole Miss doesn't cancel the non-conference schedule, I mean, you can use the Canadians against Southeast Missouri State and Connecticut and Georgia Southern, but the dude from Calgary is not getting on the field against Alabama, LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M, and the Egg Bowl. Come on.
I don't think you saw this highlight. It's pretty nice. This kid looks all right.
Okay.
By the end of the year?
By the end of the year, maybe. At the Egg Bowl when you got 47 guys in uniform. Okay.
You're cracking the Ole Miss lineup. This isn't the New England Patriots.
And you may need him to fight in the Egg Bowl. He may not play, but there's guaranteed to be some kind of fight in the Egg Bowl. And
you can do an improper touchdown celebration, whether you're Canadian or you're from Mississippi, right? That you can pee like a fake dog or whatever. Anything's possible.
Let me ask you guys this. So since we've all become infectious disease experts the last 4 months covering this story, how do you think the NFL manages to play? Like, I thought about this morning, like, as I was talking to some NFL officials about, like, how daunted they are. Like, how is the NFL really different than college? Meaning, like, they can pull this off while college can't.
They keep bringing new guys in. And their guys go home to big mansions. It's easier to social distance. And they're paying them. And you just do it. Now, is the season going to be totally wrecked and wild? Yes. Right? Hey, can't wait for tonight's game. Patrick Mahomes against Lamar Jackson. They're both out. Or, you know, Tom Brady's got to play against an offensive line. You just barrel ahead. That's the way. How are any of these things? I talk about the factories. I think I mentioned the Ford factory the other day. Like, it shuts down every 3 days, and then they start back up. You just keep going because we have to build cars. That's it. So it's really that mentality to me with the NFL is we're just going to keep going. Is the union in favor of that? Where are we at with all this? I don't know. But it's was college sports able to barrel on like that? And what do you do when your campus is going to be overrun with coronavirus? That's the thing I hear is everyone's like, this is going to be a disaster once the kids come back.
That's the thing is you're at least in the NFL, you are not tethered to a college campus or to higher education. Neither one, you know,
and you're out 2 weeks. Now, is someone going to get sick and be on a ventilator? Yeah, I don't, you know,
that's the thing. And that's where the serious illness is the potential deal breaker for everyone.
You can catch it everywhere. Right. Though.
Yeah. Some random Louisiana Lafayette safety ends up on a ventilator and the lights get start flick, 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 flick. You don't talk about dominoes. Like you know, it would be deafening clatter.
But did he catch it playing football or did he catch it going to college? No,
I don't think it matters. Did he catch it? Because he's going to be back on campus trying to play football and he's probably going to end up, you know, like in theory, maybe giving it to some other people. But I just think if there is a college football player in a hospital, God forbid, who passes away, like that's going to be the woe moment. Like the NFL executive I was talking to today was just like, I don't want it. You know, they're going to have 90 people in NFL camps in the next, 3 weeks? And he's like, that can't happen on my watch. My career's over.
I don't know if that would be a fair story, but it will be a story. All right. I wanted to get to this while we can still talk about a season in case it happens. Non-conference is gone. Okay. Let's say they play this thing on and we don't have the non-conference, at least. I'm going to say all of them are going to be gone, but they really need that flexibility. I think there's one misnomer out there that I wanted to repeat from the other day. What I'm hearing, maybe you guys are hearing different. It's not that they don't want to play the non-conference because they think they're more likely to catch a virus breathing on each other if they're playing the University of Toledo or something. It's they want the scheduling flexibility to move stuff around. Is that what you're hearing? That's what I'm hearing. Yeah. Is it as much about flexibility as anything else?
I'm hearing both. I think that certainly both are factors, and maybe the flexibility is a bigger factor, but it's also a more polite factor to bring up than the fact that basically saying we don't trust Toledo to bring a completely healthy team here because they want the $1.4 million check that they're getting or $800,000 or whatever the case may be. So the Big Ten testing protocol is one thing. The MAC might be different. The Sun Belt might be different. And as one AD put it to me, you know, we can't guarantee that they're going to test the same way we test and bring the same level of care and concern about it into our stadium.
blah, blah, blah. They just don't want to pay them. And health and safety is a gussied up PR vehicle for flexibility and nimbleness, because the same way you could play an 8-game schedule in the fall within your own league, you can just flip it to the spring. And so they're basically banding together and using health and safety of the student athlete as the vehicle to put it out there. I agree. Like, I had one AD tell me that he was going to pay that school's doctors to go to the 1AA school they were going to play, the FCS school they were going to play, and test them before the game. That way that, like, they knew there wouldn't be like mass virus spread when they opened the season with them. So that is certainly a concern, but that's not the overriding concern. The overriding concern is we got to get some games in. It's going to be easier if we all do it together. Like, you know, let's go.
Fewer games, more flexibility, and you're right. It's no longer worth paying someone $1.4 million if I have no
Correct.
One in the stands.
That's a huge
factor. And no one paying parking.
I had
So now this game is a lost dollar instead of a
yes.
made dollar.
I had a coach say this to me, and he was chuckling as he did. He said, I cringe when I hear administrators saying that the health and safety of student-athletes is first and foremost. No, it's not. If it was, you would have punted the season already.
It'll be very, like, yeah. One of my daughters is going to play 7th grade CYO volleyball. I'm guessing that season will be canceled if it already hasn't. Because who gives a crap? So, there's no money at stake. Why would anyone play CYO volleyball in the set, right? Don't care. So, all right. So if we have no non-con, though, let's say this goes through and they can pull this off. The winners and losers of not having to play non-conference college football. Now, the most obvious choice is the University of Southern California. Yeah. Whose season now no longer includes playing Alabama and Notre Dame. And now their season is kind of, boy, a lot more manageable for the Trojans. Thoughts?
Nobody yeah. wins off seasons like USC. They have won this off. They lost 5 games last year. Like, sorry.
Well, there's 2 they can't yes. lose now. They yes. were going to lose, and they're not.
They are the undefeated offseason champions. Like, remember when Mac Brown was Mr. February when he was at Texas, when he couldn't win the Big 12 early in his career? Like, nobody has owned an offseason like Clay Helton. They're recruiting ranking this and transfer that. No. Like, I'm going to buy USC the day I think Clay Helton is a national championship caliber coach. And that day has not come yet. And I don't think that day is going to come in the future.
It doesn't have to be a national championship caliber coach to win the Pac-12, though. I mean,
and he's won the Pac-12 once.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, but they are clearly, and that's the thing. Clay Helton could get his 9th life, you know, here where everybody's been waiting for him to get fired for 2 years. He could get another year out of this because, you know, coaches on the hot seat might be the safest they've ever been because of this. Because the tumult and the money are both more than people want to take on right now. You know, I mean, if you're going to hemorrhage money from not having a season or having a partial season or having no fans in the stands or whatever, well, you're not going to go pay X million in buyout to fire somebody and then X million more to bring in somebody else. Clay Helton could live on.
Yeah, we should get him a hockey mask and call him Jason because he just keeps coming. He just keeps coming back from improbable death circumstances. Now, Clay Helton makes in last reported tax documents or whatever about $4 million a season. I believe he's guaranteed for 3 more seasons. Nobody knows if that entire contract is guaranteed, but certainly a big chunk of it is. And you got to remember, they bring in Todd Orlando. They bring in Craig Kniver. They bring in the guy from Oregon, Dante Pimpleton. They bring in a bunch of these coaches who have to be on multi-year deals, right? So my rough back-of-the-napkin math on what USC would have to pay Helton and the staff to go would be easily over $15 million, probably closer to 20.
All right, let's end with this. I consider this an uplifting story.
All right. Uplift
Others
this,
may
please,
disagree.
Dan.
Yeah, because it's been a depressing one. This is the against all odds. We're all familiar, maybe not our younger audience, of the Rambo franchise, Rambo of the movies with Sylvester Stallone. He was a Vietnam veteran who basically somehow lived in the woods of state of Washington, I think, and alone managed to like kill thousands of federal officers trying to catch him. I don't remember really the plot. I just remember him always. Yeah. They'd send 50 guys at him. They would all shoot and miss. And Rambo would shoot them all with one shot or with like a bow and arrow with like a small nuclear device attached. Where he got these things, I can't remember. Anyway, the Rambo was the true anti-hero or hero. I don't know what he was. He was the hero. I don't know how you became the hero killing all the soldiers, but they did. Sort of like in Star Wars when the stormtroopers never hit anyone.
Every great action movie is built on one premise. The bad guys can't shoot straight. They never kill the good guys. They get a million shots. They always miss or they nick them, wound them, and then miraculously that wound is gone in 8 minutes.
The dark side was able to build that entire space station and while floating in air. Yet they never could train their stormtroopers to shoot.
It's like building a submarine underwater.
Yeah. How do you do this? And they did it, yet they never spent the time on just basic marine training. So anyway, one more reason why America is the greatest.
I hope we don't become like a movie review podcast. That would really be depressing. Because like we're
anyway, this is a long... Hey,
yeah. Prepare.
We're like three of the worst pop culture people in America. So...
Yeah, really. So anyway, I'm bringing up and Sully, our young guy, he's the one who brought this to my attention. Anyway, Rambo lives. Rambo is alive. My favorite news organization, AFP News. It's the second week in a row we've had AFP News. German police, backed by helicopters, are hunting a homeless man in the Black Forest who is armed with pistols and a bow and arrows. The manhunt was launched in southwest Germany. Media reports say Yves Rausch, 31, wearing camouflage gear, disarmed four police officers on Sunday after threatening him with a pistol. They are warning public and aircraft to avoid the area. Beware, wanted man has several guns. Local drivers have been warned against picking up hitchhikers. He is hiding out getting searched on by helicopters, our military, everyone is trying to chase this guy in the Black Forest, and they have not been able to catch Yves. Are you rooting for Yves or are you rooting for the cops? What do we got here? Homeless man. I mean, I guess you have to be homeless. Rambo is homeless, I guess. I mean, I think that's it's kind of a mean term for the guy. Survivalist, I think. Let's be nice.
Survivalist. Very good.
He's trying to stay away from COVID. He's social distancing, and he doesn't want anyone near him. He's pulling out his guns. Back away. I'm not bothering anyone out here in the woods. Why are they hunting this guy? I have all sorts of questions.
Hey, and he disarmed the cops. He didn't kill the cops.
I'm sorry.
Right?
He
disarmed them. So he's not.
He didn't. Previous offenses, including illegal possession of firearms. Yeah. Okay. Guess there's that.
I'm rooting for Yves to hunker down in the 2,320 square mile Black Forest and never be caught, ever. I hope he lives out there forever, becomes like the legend of the woods. Doesn't shoot anybody with his guns or his bow and arrow. And they can bring out Sylvester Stallone at age like 83 to make the movie about him.
I'm rooting for college football to come back because if we're after like break down Rambo 1 compared to Rambo 2, it's going to be a pretty dark time on this podcast.
Tell the truth. Have you seen any Rambos, Pete?
I have likely seen a Rambo in the 80s, but it is like deep within the recesses of my mind and long forgotten. Like I know like Rambo's the guy who just kills everybody. That's about all I can give you on Rambo. I see him not with like the bow and arrow, though. I see him just like with a machine gun with like bullets flying out of it. That's my image of Rambo.
Yeah,
not much more.
Apparently Sully likes Rambo.
I'll take Charleston Rambo, Oklahoma star receiver. That's the Rambo I want.
Anyway, in the magic of the internet, I now have, but through three clicks, have his mugshot.
Really?
Okay. You never know. Yeah, it's all in German, but oddly, he's wearing an earring.
Well,
I didn't think Rambo would have one earring. I didn't.
That was
nothing against
the
earrings on guys, but I thought that was. Maybe he's just an 80s throwback. Anyway, don't blame the old guys on the show for this reference. It's Sully.
Can't you see Sully like settling in on a Tuesday? Like, do I watch like the Tennessee National Championship game or BCS title game from 1999, or do I watch Rambo 2? It's like he's like flipping back and forth. Like,
all volunteer fans are stuck in the 80s and 90s. It's really
no lies detected there, Dan.
Boom, got him.
All right, that's the end of this podcast. More uplifting tales. The state of affairs in college athletics coming up later this week. Oh, boy. Buckle up. Talk to you guys later. Please subscribe and leave us a nice review. See you.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.